Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by our proud title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena, the next generation of off-ice hockey training for players and goalies. Look, we know how much you invest in your children's hockey development, the early mornings, the travel, and let's not forget the expenses of training for hockey camps, private ice time, the general expenses of the season. It's a lot. But wouldn't it be great to bring that on-ice practice experience home that's fun, fits into your schedule, and that's affordable? If you said yes, which I'm sure you did, you've got to check out NHL Sense Arena. It's a top-tier virtual reality training game that brings the on-ice practice experience home so you can practice anytime and anywhere, literally. You can transform any part of your home into a virtual ice rink where you're getting unlimited access to over 100 drills, training plans from top coaches and players, weekly drill challenges, and more that focus on improving hockey sense and physical cognitive skills, starting at just $33 per month. That is a lot cheaper than an hour of ice time. The physical side of hockey gets a lot of attention, but we don't focus enough on the mental side of it. It's something we talk about on this show all the time. NHL Sense Arena provides an immersive solution for players to sharpen those skills when ice time is limited or not affordable and they want to get those extra reps in. So, for our listeners, NHL Sense Arena is offering an exclusive $50 off their annual plan. All you got to do is head over to their website, hockey.senseArena.com. Again, hockey.senseArena.com, and use our code HOCKEYNEVERSTOPS, and you'll level up your off-ice training by using NHL Sense Arena. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting us and NHL Sense Arena. Enjoy this episode of Our Kids Play Hockey. You know, there's not many things that I would do to trump who or what we're talking about on this episode because we have an amazing guest today, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But because of you, we've been nominated as a Sports Podcasting Awards Podcast of the Year in the hockey category. So first off, thank you for your support in helping us get to that level. And if you'd like to support us even more, head over to ourkidsplayhockey.com. There's a link there because it's at the point now where it is somewhat of a fan vote to pick a winner. It is an absolute honor to even be nominated and shortlisted by their experts, ranging from people from Amazon to eBay and other big networks. But if you want to help us get to that title, you can go over to ourkidsplayhockey.com right now. There'll be a link there to vote. So if you pause right now and do that, we'd really appreciate it. But if you don't want to pause right now, let's get into the episode today with Paul Cohen. Paul is a former AHL, ECHL, and collegiate Division I goaltender. He is a hell of a person. He owned his own goaltending school, now owns his own business. He is the head coach of the Puerto Rican Ice Hockey Association men's Division I national team. And in this episode, we dive into everything from how to coach goalies, how to make sure that we're incorporating them into practice. But we also talk a lot about the mental health, mental fitness, mental preparation side of the position, which really spans beyond just goaltending, but it shines a light on how important it is for a goaltender to do that. So coaches, if you're listening, and parents, if you're listening, it's going to give you a lot of insight into that. And even beyond that, we talk a little bit about the size of the nets and how they're changing throughout the game. I'm not going to tell you what he thinks or what I think or what Mike thinks, but I am going to tell you it's a little bit of a debate that you're going to want to hear about. So let's dive into that episode with Paul Cohen on Our Kids Play Goalie right now. Hello, hockey friends and families around the world, and welcome to another episode of the show. We're talking about butterflies is always acceptable. Our Kids Play Goalie. Our guest today, Paul Cohen, is a former professional and collegiate goalie and is also an experienced player and goalie coach. He started in net for St. Lawrence University for multiple years during their championship runs of the late 80s before embarking on a professional career that would see him become an established goalie in the ECHL, AHL, and several top European leagues until the turn of the century. Paul is also an established business owner as the founder of UltimateHockeyFans.com and is an experienced coach, having run his own hockey school for many years, and today is the head coach of the men's national team for Puerto Rico. And a final fun fact, and there are many when it comes to Paul, he is one of the few goalies that has actually scored a goal in a pro game, having done so with the Springfield Indians of the AHL through traffic, I might add. You want to check YouTube for this one. This is not just one of those clean goals. He had to deke a couple people. Paul, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome to Our Kids Play Goalie.
Hey, thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. So, Paul, when we start the show, we always find that goalies have a real interesting story of how they got between the pipes. Sometimes it's because you're a sibling. Sometimes you just find it. What is your reason for embarking on that position?
Well, actually, I started off as a forward back in the Toronto days, where they had the 2 minute buzzer to change shifts. And I was actually 5 years old, and every time that I would go off the ice, I would start crying because I would want to go and keep playing. So, of course, one day the goalie didn't show up. Coach looked around the dressing room and was like, "Who wants to play goal? Who wants to play goal?" And I was like, "No, no, no." And then he said, "You get to stay on the ice the whole game." I was like, "I'm in. That's me.
That's me."
And literally from that point on, it was goalie.
Yeah, you know, I experienced that kind of with my own kid, Paul, where he played kind of forward/defense for a few years, and then he got in the net. He hasn't come out, and he won't. He just loves it so much. You know, my next question for you, Paul, is this, and for everybody listening here, we're going to dive into some really cool goaltending stuff today, but the goaltending position is always evolving, and I'm curious, what are some of the biggest changes you saw during your career, and how do you adapt to them? Because, again, as we've discussed off the call many times, you're in a transitional time period when you played. Right. And the game evolved, and you did it, right? You evolved successfully through that. So take us through some of those changes and how you managed to get through them.
Well, it wasn't only the evolving, it was the learning, because back in the day, it was the Bernie Parent, Terry Sawchuk, skate safe. You know, that's what you were. You were up, you were square. They never wanted you to go down. If you went down, you got yelled at. Basically, you had to follow the puck right into your stick, deflect it to the corner, the old big skate save. And then all of a sudden, things started to change. Pads, the equipment got a lot better, a lot lighter, from the old brown deer hair that weighed 15 pounds on a leg, to all of a sudden the new the Aeroflexes and the foam. But really, it was the coaching. And unfortunately, I only had a week of coaching. We went to a place called Cooper Sport Camp. It was an Appleby College in Oakville, Ontario. And it was run by a guy by the name of Bill Hayward, who used to be the power skating coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, back in the day, it was Ron McClair and Fred Scambatti, who were the goalie coaches. They never really played at a high level, but they had a program that you had to follow. And typically, through the years of going there in week 5 and 6, because those were the elite weeks to be able to go there, that's where you started every single year learning different saves. So again, it was a skate save. Then we did T pushes back in the day. I mean, it was telescoping T pushes, and then all of a sudden it went to shuffling. Then all of a sudden it went to, oh, you can go down now. Well, why do you go down? And they never really explained, you know, and this is now when you're 11, 12, 13, where you're starting to figure things out. Guys are starting to shoot the puck a lot harder. Ooh. They're picking the top corners. I mean, guys on my team, minor hockey, Bob Probert, Sam Haidee, guys who played in the NHL, you know, you got John Tucker, another guy, not dropping names, but these were all guys in our youth organization who, the older that they got, the shots were getting harder. So around 12 or 13 was the transition of really understanding why to go into the butterfly.
Well, listen, first off, name drop all you want. That's the whole point of this. You deserve it. You had a wonderful career there. You know, you talked about the coaching, and first off, I love that. And Mike, you should come in on this too, right? It was once a summer, you learned something new. Now it's like once an hour.
Oh, done.
Coaches are bringing in something new, right?
Yeah. It's too much, right? I mean, it's like information overload sometimes, instead of just letting your athlete be an athlete. And I think it's so funny how the game's evolving, right? Because now we're watching goalies that are conditioned to be low and on the ice and in the butterfly and the VH and the whole thing. And now we're evolving, right? Our forwards are understanding, well, that's how we're going to beat a guy up top from behind the net. And I just watched Trevor Zegras score a goal, you know, between his legs last night, because the goalie's down and out, and you know, the puck has eyes, right? So where do you put the angle of that stick? You put it somewhere where the angle is going to go to where, you know,
exactly,
you have the open ice. So I think it's really great, Paul, right? That when you describe, you know, just your little evolution, how, you know, nothing's ever set in stone, and you try to find goalies that can perform, I guess, right? You're the percentages, yeah, right? Yeah. How do you take a great athlete and then build them in, and then go through these camps and these programs to just try to fine tune, like, how can I make this athlete their own, and then fine tune all the little pieces that you have to have as far as a goaltender goes?
Exactly. It was fundamentals. You know what? When I look back at those, the early days at Cooper Sport Camp and everything like that, it was fundamentals. And I think a lot of goalie coaches are getting away from that. They try to do, for instance, okay, in this situation, it's basically a guessing. And it's not. When you're 4 foot nothing, all right, and you're young and you don't know how to move laterally or you don't know why to move laterally and you keep going down and most importantly, you're not centered in your net and you're not on your angle, well, that's why you're getting beat. It's not because you have to go down on every shot. It's your positioning in the net and then from there, what kind of movement am I going to use? What's the situation? And then this is the save that I'm going to make. And then on top of that, you've got to say, okay, rebound control. What am I going to do after I make that save? And it just has to, it's automatic. And that's when I got into my goaltending camps and started teaching them. That's initially how I viewed how I'm going to teach every player. It's not going to teach them a style. They're going to develop their style over time. It's teaching them the fundamentals.
Right. And it's super true of skaters too. You know, the balance between creativity and then fundamentals, and like every young player wants to be creative, but if they don't have the fundamentals, the creativity is going to somewhat go to waste. And you know, what I'm finding, Paul, with my own son is we work a lot on fundamentals, and it's funny because obviously I'm hyper focused on the goaltending position now because he's there for the first time in my life, which is really exciting. Right. I one of the best parts about the journey with my kid is that I'm learning the game again through a different set of eyes, which is really a gift. But some of the things I've seen, and we've talked about this on the show before, Mike, I have seen 8-9-year-old goalies with the best equipment, fully dressed, with parents behind the net yelling at them to do certain saves, and the kid can barely skate or doesn't understand just basic fundamentals of skating, not much less goaltending, right? And you said it before too, and this is going to lead to a question about the why behind the movement, right? It's not just about dropping to the butterfly or moving laterally. It's the why behind it. So one of the purposes of this offshoot of Our Kids Play Hockey is to help coaches, to help parents who are even not goaltending parents understand the position better so we can coach the position better. So my next question for you is, what are some of the questions that youth coaches should be asking about the goaltending position that they're not currently?
Well, that's a good question. What are they not asking? Well, first off, are the kids having fun? Because that's the number one question. All right. Being stuck in net used to be, hey, the old fat kid or the kid that was greedy that wanted to play all the time. You know, now it's one of these, why do you want to be a goalie? Okay, well, you like it. Okay, that's the first thing to start off with, is liking the position, not being forced to play the position. I think that would be the first question.
Yeah, I think so too. And again, you're right. It was a situation this year for my kid where it was a rotating goalie to start the season. He just fell into it. And it's obvious that he loves it, right? And the dedication from really all the coaches at that level to help him has been really motivating for me, you know. Here's another one for you, Paul. So in addition to the questions, I think that goaltending is a position that's often underutilized or mismanaged at practice. So what can we do as coaches to do a better job of making the practices more beneficial for goalies, obviously including the goalies, and instead of just saying, get in the net, stop the puck, in the next 30 minutes, we're going to be skating. You figure it out, all right? You know, but we got to do a better job of incorporating them into practices. How can we do that?
Well, you know what? That's the age-old question. You know, how do we get our goalies involved in practice? You know, I don't want to age myself, but back when they started with the goalie, player and forward and goalie mentorship programs, I think it was called Mitron, and then Nike came up with it. Was, you know, how to have a specialist in your organization be able to go around to all the coaches, all right, and basically help them understand how they can utilize goalies in practice. And, you know, this is, again, old school. We're talking a good 15 years ago. And it was like, I know how to run my practices. Don't tell me. And you sit there and you watch the goalies do pirouettes and they skate in the corner and the drills are going on and then they pop in and make a save and then they go out. And I think nowadays it's so easy because of all the different software that is out there to be able to have a drill and then to say, okay, this is what the drill is going to be. Even if it's, you know, beginning of practice where the guys are, you have your entire team skating around and working their edges and that, there are so many circle drills or crease drills that the goalie should be doing, all right, not only for fundamentals, but for stamina and for conditioning that they could be doing as well to get warmed up and then get in the crease to stop pucks. It's not one of those things, and I know ice time is so valuable at every single level. It's like the coaches want to bang, get right off the start and start with practice. The goalies need at least 5 minutes just crease mobility drills to get going into practice, and then you can start off with the shots from, you know, the, I'd say anywhere from the blue line to the top of the circles, get them to see the puck. You don't want them coming right in a slot and ripping high and high heat at them right at the beginning, because then all of a sudden the goalie's going to start throwing your stick at them.
You know, Paul, you know,
like I would never do anything like that. But.
Paul, it's almost, yeah. We said my college goalie used to, I said, listen, if you take a shot from the corner of the line, right? If the pucks are coming at you, but some knucklehead wants to try top shelfing the puck from the corner and stand in the line, hit you, you have every right in the world to chop the kid down. I said, that's on them. You want to be that stupid? Go ahead. I think this is everywhere. I mean, I see it in my kids' lacrosse practices. I see it in soccer. I see it even in baseball with catchers. Like all these positions, hockey goalie, catcher, you know, no coaches do a great job of finding ways to utilize their coaching staff. For instance, right. You know, I'm the head coach. I got 18 other players and I got these two goalies. So where naturally will I weigh my attention as far as what time I have to teach? Well, I'm probably going to weigh it on the 18 and expect the two to be like, okay, just take care of yourself, do your warm up, do your routine. But I'm finding every day, like the people I advise, like there's no reason whatsoever why a parent, somebody helping another kid, can't be out there putting goalies through just little mental and movement routines. Like to your point, like those reps to get them on the ice is so crucial. Like I watched a video the other day I sent out to the goaltenders I work with of, I forget who it was, one of the professional baseball first base coaches. And all he was doing, literally 5 feet from the first baseman, just throwing a ball and the player snapping it. And you look at it like a 9-year-old coach, you're like, what the hell is this? Like, this is a professional athlete that's getting paid $12 million a year, and he's doing a 5-foot catching drill with his coach. You can't tell me you can't find a parent to do that with your goalie? Like, while you're working your kids out, and I think this is where we lack the most in understanding the position as coaches, as the lead coaches, that all those little things don't take a lot of me knowing the goalie position. It's me managing the fact that there's going to be these 10 minutes here and these 15 minutes here and these 12 minutes there that I need to make sure that somebody else can give my goalie the reps. Because I guess maybe you could talk about this a little bit, the deliberate reps. Like how often can I have my forwards come down and I want my goalie to work on his high to low catching or whatever it is that my players can actually hit those spots on a regular basis, right? Like you hear the glass and he gets hit off the head, this kid hits it. So, you know, I think that those opportunities to get quality reps in, I think you can build those into your practice if you have the right organizational skills.
Without a doubt. Okay, so let's take a couple examples. You're just on the ice. You're starting practice. You can actually design a practice for the first 5 minutes that the goalies are from the say the top of the circles in with two players and a parent. Okay, both goalies are in the net. You could do. I mean, I've got hundreds of drills where there's actually two goalies in the net. And you're working on different drills, whether it is goalies, one goalie starting at the top of the circle, the other goalie on the left-hand post. You bang your stick, you start the drill. It's a butterfly shuffle to the other post. The other goalie comes up, make the save, you're shooting it. So whether it's right in front of the goalie or whether they're utilizing the dots on the circles, you could do drills like that. You can have a goalie stopping behind the net, pretending that he's playing a puck, have a puck sit there, shoot the puck around the boards while the goalie that's in front of the net takes a shot. Then he goes around the opposite side of the net, stops the puck. Again, it's being creative. It's getting out there, understanding, okay, hey, what are game situation drills that I can do for 5 minutes to warm my goalies up? Look at all the crease drills. Just take a look at Fleury. Take a look at Fleury in between every single whistle. What stretching, what mobility drills that he does. I mean, it's and that's during a game. Yeah. Okay, so that's the first thing. So then all of a sudden now we're in the flow drills, all right? It's kind of difficult to implement a second shot in a flow drill, okay? Say you're doing a Calgary curl. It's all timing. Goalie makes a save. Goalie's getting shots consistently. Now, say you're doing a drill where there's a pause and there's a regroup. Now you can utilize that coach where it's going to be a secondary save. So no matter where it is, okay, because every coach should be having their players drive the net, stop on the net for rebounds. That's number one. Okay, so they get to play that rebound. And then depending on where they are in the net, you can either have two if you're lucky enough, or if you have one coach where the goalie has to move over to that coach to take a secondary rebound shot. So you can't tell me you can't be creative with all kinds of drills. If they can do it at the pro level, you could do it at the youth level as well. It's just being creative and understanding the drills.
And not being lazy with your planning.
Well, exactly. That's
part of it too. Like we talk about this all the time on both shows about, you know, are you planning your practice when you get to the rink, or was your practice planned? All right. And goaltending has to be part of that practice. And I also love that you said, Paul, we've talked about this a lot, about players going after their rebounds when appropriate. It's for anybody listening who has a skater, I implore them to do that all the time. You know, the other thing too, Paul, I was thinking about even just in warmups. We talked about this, Mike, you know, about understanding as a player how to warm up your goaltender. And, you know, it's funny, at the younger ages, the coaches will say to me, well, they'll just shoot wherever they want. Well, have you sat down with your team and told them the purpose of the warm-up for the goaltending? And I find that that conversation just doesn't happen at the younger ages. And what's funny is even at the men's league level, I was at a game a few months ago, and one of my guys ripped it right off my goalie's helmet, and he was understandably upset. So I went out of my way to make sure. I said, you know what, I'm just going to put a bunch of pucks in the middle. I'll warm them up. You guys just skate around to not piss off our goaltender. But yeah, a lot of this just comes down to preparing. Like you said, there is no lack of drills and there's no lack of resources. Mike and I talk about this too. The USA Hockey Coaching app has plenty of goaltending drills for different skill levels. And I think that there's way more beyond that, that if you want to take literally 30 minutes prior to the season, you could have your whole season planned in terms of goaltending drills, in terms of just, you know, how to incorporate them into a situation. So I think that's really important. And I don't think we do that enough as coaches, and especially the younger level coaches. I think it's important that you find ways to incorporate the skating and the fundamentals.
Exactly.
Paul, another thing, a big part of the position is obviously the mental side. And, you know, on the show, we really try and tackle the mental fitness of every position. But needless to say, the goaltender has to be the most mentally strong person on the team in my mind. You know, I know you pretty well. You're a very headstrong, mentally strong person. I'm curious of a couple things. One is, you know, how did that develop to you, if you're comfortable talking about that? And the other thing too is, you know, how do we develop that at a young age? And again, the quick example is, you know, when you're 15, 16, it's different conversation about, hey, you got to be mentally strong than when you're 8 or 9. And the understanding of, hey, the puck's going to go in the net. How are we going to respond to this, right? Are we going to get angry and slam our stick and go back like it's the end of the world? Or are we going to reset? I want to know your approach to the game mentally, how you got there, and how we can build that as coaches.
Well, to say that I'm competitive is an understatement.
It is an understatement. I agree.
I hated to lose. I hated giving up goals to the point where it was – I think nowadays they would have me going to you, Lee, when you really think about it, because it was I didn't want to let my teammates down, and that's what it was. Because if they score on you, it wasn't how it is now, where you take a look and you break it all down, and you know, hey, yeah, it went past the goalie. There's five other guys that it's got to get through. No, back then they look at you and they point at you, and it was your fault. So I think it started just from my competitiveness. All right. And then it started, well, if you're going to break a stick, you're not going to use a stick in practice the next day, you know, or you're going to do, or you're going to work in the garden, or you're going to work outside and you're going to earn to be able to get a
there
stick.
There was no Mike Benelli's back then to provide sticks to everybody. That's
You know, it's funny that you say this, Paul. I was just saying this to somebody the other day. Like, I can't believe watching highlights of the end of these games, like the last couple of months, how many NHL goalies are just destroying sticks over the net, like at you know, and maybe it's because there's more shoot. I mean, maybe because in the shootouts and I don't know overtime. Maybe I'm just seeing it more. But I look at that, and I'm not expecting everybody to be like a perfect role model. But I'm like, holy crap, that's like a $350 stick for a kid, right? That just ripped that thing over the post and forget about what he's doing. Like you know, you're watching these sticks flying by, you know, officials and things like that. You know, shattered and broken, but. It's just a weird, it's just something I noticed like that to me, when Lee talks about your mental toughness, like that's your, like everyone sees the goalie. Everyone. Right. Like if I'm a defenseman and I make a bad play, I kind of skate to the corner. I could be a jackass and break my stick over my knee. Nobody's seeing that. Everybody is the spotlight. Everything's on the goalie. So I think maybe talk about that a little bit, like at the youth level, like what does that do for the bench? Like it's the middle of the game. We give up a goal. Okay, it's one goal in the whole scheme of the game. But that goalie's now has lost his mind. And what does that do to the rest? Like, forget about what it does to the player. What does that do to the rest of the bench?
All right. So basically, you take a look at that in two parts, for the goalie and then for the team. Okay, for the goalie, guys pretty, you know, they understand exactly what the goalie is made of. However, I wish I would have learned this a lot earlier in my career on how to process the goal and not have that rage of letting the goal or that guy scoring. I mean, you scored me, I hated you. You know, it's like guys get scored on the goal for cocktails later. You know, it never registered to me at all. But I was taught, it was my junior year. And I had just a father come up to me, had no idea who he was, and just wanted to talk to me. And it was like, you know, you're getting really upset and everything. Have you ever tried just after a goal, skating in the one corner, cross the front of the net, skate to the other, think about it, get to the middle of the net, and you know what? It's done. It's over with. You know, you can't bring it back. You can't get upset. Because then he started explaining to me that when you do that, all right, now you're affecting the team. The team's looking at you. Well, is he confident? You know, what's going on? Or they look at it, oh, that's just Cole. He's just pissed off that he let in a goal. Nowadays, it's totally different. You have to process it. And you know what? Yeah, frustration's going to happen. You know, I can't say that it's wrong or it's not wrong to break your stick or if it's passion. Okay. But to be able to process it and say, okay, they scored on me. Skate, even though you knew you're telling the D backdoor, next thing you know, you're square to the backdoor goal. And you're like, oh, skate to the corner, back in, going in the net. And then you're looking at it going, okay, got to focus on the next shot.
Okay. Because it's almost more intimidating that you don't react. Like if you're a goalie who doesn't react, I'm like, oh crap. Like that kid he doesn't care. Like he's just like, okay, whatever, get back into it. You know, face off, let's go. I mean, I think that's such a strong mental piece. And it's the intimidation piece, right? That says, no, it's almost like when you watch a player, you know, I don't know. And I've seen this, like I think it's like football is my perfect example of, you know, the over the top. It's like emotions being out there on the field, like you know, you're losing by five touchdowns and you score and you're doing a dance. I'm like, you're losing by five touchdowns. So when I see a goalie, like celebrating a big save or crying after a bad call, it's the same thing. Like to me, like I want that kid to learn how to be unemotional, have emotion, but let it start influencing the rest of the game where you could say, my God, this kid just doesn't care. It's almost like it's like a player in trash talking, right? Like, you know, the players that you could get under their skin and give it where, you know, like over time, over that game, that player can't play anymore.
But you know, both of you guys, I'll tell you this too. And this is only true of goaltending. There might be a rare night where a player's scoring a lot. And it just seems like he's got the golden touch or she's got the golden touch. But goaltenders mentally for players. I've been in several games where you get to the point of we're not scoring tonight. Like, we're not going to score on this guy. And I'll tell you what, only goalies can break a team that way. And it goes both ways, right? If a goalie's losing his mind, so we're going to score a lot tonight. But the goaltender is the only position I've ever played against where I go, man, we can't get anything in the net. And they take your soul, for lack of a better word, right? And Mike, I agree with you. I think when a goaltender is stone cold, which is it's hard to do, that is more intimidating than the guy losing his mind, because it's just so easy to say, well, we're getting in his head now.
Well, I used to love those stories of like Dominic Hasek and stuff, where coaches like, we got to bring in like a third goaltender here for practice because our guys can't score. Like, they think they can't score. I go, well, it's the best goalie in the world. I said, you're, of course you can't score. Like, you see, we don't know how to score. Well, you do know how to score.
Hey, to be fair, there's always the Hextall approach too, which is just chase the guy down with your stick until he stops shooting.
Listen, I was a Billy Smith man, so you know, I like that. I said, go ahead,
Paul. I'm sure what Paul was the guy.
Yeah. Oh, Billy. Hey, don't even get me going on Billy Smith. Billy Smith was. The Islanders goalie coach my first year there. All right. And oh yeah, great story. Okay, so I don't know, just met Billy, you know, he referred to college guys as college pukes. Okay. He liked the Western, the OHL, you know, the I don't even know if it was Quebec League goalies, if he even liked them, but anyways, long story short, he was telling me that when a player comes down on you on the angle and he's, you know, going, he's going to try to cut in. And at the last minute, if he goes behind the net, you have to hit him. And I was like, so you're telling me when Pat LaFontaine is breaking around Nyland and Nyland is coming back to the near post, that if Pat LaFontaine comes in front of me, I'm supposed to hit Pat LaFontaine? And he looked at me and he says, do what I say. And I said, well, what is Nyland getting paid for? Yep, I was down on the minors. It happened like that. And it wasn't even the American League. It was right to the coast.
But
that was the old school thinking.
Yeah.
That was depending on the goalie coach that you had. And, you know, Billy is a dear friend today. I mean, it was how goalie coaches were wired back then and there. They were all ex-goalies, and depending on who you got, was the style that they wanted you to play.
Right. One of my favorite quotes in hockey is Gordie Howe. It's play hockey religiously. It's better to give than to receive. That sums up the time period. And like, I wanted to go back a little bit to Paul about just the mentality, because I'm a big believer in hating to lose. Right. And again, I forgive me, audience, for keep using my son as an example. These episodes are becoming investigative journalism for me in a lot of ways, but look, here's the deal.
And it's keeping my kids out of goaltending. So
exactly.
So one of the things, and this is not limited to my son, like one of the things I see in young kids is when they get scored on, I look for the reaction. All right. And I've told my son, who has reacted pretty tremendously before, I don't mean that in a positive way, he hates to let the puck in. He hates to lose. Mm-hmm. So I've told him, and I think a lot of this is just in how you approach it. I told him, Logan, it's a good thing that you hate when that puck goes in the net. That's a good thing, but you've got to be able to control your emotions so that it doesn't take you out of the game. Right. But don't ever lose that hatred of the puck going in or losing to compete. And that brings me to this point, Paul, and this is something, you joked earlier about, you might have to come to me today. You know, what's funny in my line of work is a lot of people mistake what I do. I'm not saying you for kind of this kumbaya kind of thing. And it's not that at all. Right. And I tell people you have to separate competitiveness and competing. They are two different things. And I always tell the young goalies and even the kids I coach that we need to work on your competitiveness. That needs to be at the top possible level it can be. But then you have to understand within that, the gift of competing. It is a different thing. Anytime we get to be on the ice or the field or whatever you're playing, it is a gift to compete. It's a gift to have a component. And you have to find this kind of balance between these two things. And I think that when the mistake happens, it's people judge themselves or their game on just the competing and not their level of competitiveness, right? I hope this is making sense, right? So that's one of the things that I focus on is, you know, it's good to have emotions. It's good to hate to lose, to hate to let the puck in, but you cannot let them control you. You need to be in control of them. And I think that's one of the things that you were able to do. And look, for the people listening, I work with Paul. I know Paul. Paul is one of the greatest competitors I have ever met in my life. right? It is obvious, but you have control over it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's I think that's actually a little scary to people sometimes, like the intensity of view. But you're like, Mike, to your point, like, man, he's not moving. Like, his face is stone cold, but I know he wants to win.
It's hard. It's hard, yeah. Right? Because you don't, yeah. I don't know. You don't want to, you don't, I think like if that's the beauty about coaching young men and women is how do you harness that? Like, I want you to want to break that stick. I want you to want to chase that player down. I want you to take a stick across the kid's throat. Can't do that. Like, we got to figure out, like, I want that energy, but we want to control it in a different way. And if you can harness that, and I think a lot of us as youth coaches miss that. We miss the fact that we want our kids to be stone cold killers, but we don't want them to do it in front of us. Like,
we don't want them to become stone cold killers.
And
viewers out there, we're not trying.
I'm talking about the athletic sense. So we want them to be like these kids that can withstand all of this pressure, but we don't let them release that pressure. Like, we don't let them say, hey, listen, this is, you're going to do, I think Lee, we just talked about it, right? On a different guest that wrote in about his kid, you know, kept getting into fights or slashing and getting pulled out of the line. But the kid was like, just emotion. He didn't know how to do, like, he's like,
couldn't control it.
Yeah. I don't know how to control it. I'm just, okay, that's our job. We got to teach it, but don't take it away, because we want that later on. Like, we want that competitiveness. Yeah. And goaltender, we need that competitiveness.
I think that goes back to what I was saying is over time and understanding how to be able to turn that switch on and off for you. Like, you'll see goalies in all levels. Okay. After a goal, do one of two or three things. Number one, they'll never ever pull the puck out of the net. Okay. They'll let the ref get down, pull it out or something like that. All right. And just stand there. And then after he's gone, all right, do a little routine just in the crease. All right. Then you'll have the goalie, like I was saying, well, again, not pull the puck out of the net. Just let it be there. You don't even want to visualize that in the net to begin with. All right. So, and then that is the goalie that's going to skate around a little bit further to cool off. And then you have the third is he's going to take a much longer skate, and he's going to go right to the corners, and you're going to see his head bobbing up and down. You may even see him hit himself in the head for being how he feels he's just, and then when he gets back to the crease, you just have to try to figure out a way to relax yourself, to focus back on the puck. So as soon as that rep drops the puck, it's focusing on the puck again. So you're right. You want them to be the top competitor as they possibly can, but you also want them to be themselves and let that emotion out, because you don't want them to harness that frustration in, because that's when, you know, somebody could lose an ankle, stick gets broken, guys do stupid things. And then you're like, okay, well, you know what? They used to say, that's just code. You know, they knew the competitiveness, but when I would do something that was out of the norm, it was just like, well, he's got it. Okay, it's gone. He's good. And I think that's it. And we live in a totally different world right now, where we really got to take in consideration the mental well-being of every athlete. And I think it starts at the young age, instead of blaming them for letting the goal. It's a team. The team, but you know what? At the end of the day, the goalie knows, or the pitcher knows, if he gives up a home run or a quarterback throws an interception, he's looking at himself.
Right.
So the three toughest positions to play in all sports.
Well, I think though, Paul, in the accountability on this, as you said, when we build team dynamics, it's if any of those situations happen that you said, the quarterback, the pitcher, the goalie, it's, does that person's teammates know that that person in that position is going to do everything they can to make sure that doesn't happen again? Like, that's full accountability. And we don't build that enough, especially in youth sports, where it's the car ride home, right? Well, if Johnny didn't make that pass, we would have won the game. That is the worst thing you can tell your kid in a car. First off,
I'll tell you, Lee, it wasn't even like that. And it starts with parenting, okay?
Right.
100% parenting. I love my dad the whole night. Do you know how many steering wheels and dashboards that he broke by pointing at me that it was my and again, right. It goes back to parenting and teaching and understanding because he never played the game. He wasn't an athlete. It was just, how could you let that in type of thing? And it starts from there where like, oh, I never want to let that in because, geez, I don't want him to break the steering wheel,
right.
You know?
Right.
But to your point, right, it's understanding the team concept, the position of wherever your son is playing, whether it's those three tough positions, and then being able, or daughter, and then being able to go to him and say, hey, don't worry about it. And have a conversation with them. Okay.
Right.
Going back to when my Lisa played, when she started playing goalie. Okay. I didn't want her to play goalie. She was at the goalie camps. My camps were for the kids, they were paying customers. All the parents loved her. The instructors loved her. She's 7, 8 years old on the ice, whatever. She's going to be with it. No problem whatsoever. Okay. We get in the first game ever. She gives up, I think, 8 or 9 goals. All right. Comes out. And we're living in Ontario at the time. So, yep, I have the Timmies. I have her hot chocolate all ready to go in the car. And even then, pads are off, you know, puts her running shoes on. So, basically, she's got her bandana on, sweating, goalie upper gear on and everything like that. Jumps in the car, has everything. And I said to her, Lise, you know, you don't have to be a goalie like daddy if you don't want to. Thinking about, like, oh, how bad she played. And she looked at me and she said, Dad, I just want to be like you.
Oh.
And right from that moment on, from a coaching standpoint, the switch changed.
Yeah.
So, and that's what it was all about. Another similar story down here in a goalie, first kid tried goalie, he's out there going to goalie camp, is loving it. And then, you know, walk into the rink and his mom comes up and Tyler just played his first game. I was like, oh, I look up and 11-2. And I'm like, I hope he was a 2. Coach came up. Hey, Coach Paul. Hey, I played my first game. It was awesome. I go, yeah. Hey, looks like you did well. Well, I only gave up 11 goals. You know, it's like he's happy. You
yeah.
know, and that's part of it as well. That's the most important part is having fun.
Paul, I'll tell you, when Logan was starting to dabble in the position. By the way, for everybody listening, Lisa is Paul's daughter. she was a hell of a person, hell of a goalie. But when Logan started playing. I joked the worst thing possible happened. He had a shutout in his first game. I'm not bragging. Follow me here. I was like, that's the worst thing that could have happened because now he's going to think he's going to do this. Right. And I said to my wife, I said, here's what's going to happen. At some point he's going to get pumped. And I said, and then we'll know. I said, then we'll know. And I remember it happened. It was like a 13-2 game. And I said, oh, this is it. This is the moment. Right. We went up to him. He's like, how do you feel? Like, that's great. When am I getting back in net again? I was like, all right,
there you go.
This kid's a goalie. you know, one of the things I want to talk about, taking a lot of notes here. You talked about, you know, another funny story for me. You talked about the kind of the mechanisms for resetting yourself after the goal. We had another guest on that talked about spraying the water bottle and watching the water droplets fall. And that's how he got present. And I told that to my Mike team. And now after every goal, the whole team is spraying their water. People are looking at our bench like, "What? Why are they wasting all their water?"
Yeah.
But the point of the story is this. These techniques, these mental techniques, are not just limited to the goaltender. And inadvertently, we taught the whole team the process of watch the water droplets. Now, again, they're 8, 9 years old. I don't know how much they're actually understanding it, but they're doing it. And the point is, you can teach this stuff. You know, talking about emotion, right? And look, this is advice for adults too. All right. I think one of the misnomers or things, I should say mistakes we make, is assuming our children understand fully what they're feeling. All right. And so often as a child, and this happens to adults too, you can be hijacked by an emotion. Anybody who's ever driven a car understands this, right? Someone cuts you off, you lose your mind. The emotion has hijacked you. Right. Mm-hmm. And what I try and teach people and teach kids is that it's okay to feel that. But this is the advice for parents. Have your kid identify the feeling and say it out loud. I am angry. I am frustrated. I am happy. I'm elated. So they can start to build a base of what they're feeling. And then that inhibits it, it stops it from hijacking them completely. But I want them to feel it. I want them to know. As a goaltender, you're frustrated, you're angry. I want you to be that way, right? I don't want you to be zenned out to the point you don't care, but I want you to be in control of the emotion. So, Paul, as you said, you can reset, find those little, like I call them triggers, right, to reset your mind. Like another one I do with teams regularly is when we get scored on or we score, because emotion goes both ways. You can get too excited in the game and lose it. I always ask, what's the score? No matter what the score is, the answer is 0-0. Because that's the mentality we want. We're even keeled. We're playing. Goalies have to do this all the time, right?
Yeah.
You know, a player can have a mental lapse on the bench. It's not going to affect the game. If a goalie has a mental lapse in the middle of the game, it's going to affect the game. But I implore people to find those like little mini triggers in your lives. This is, again, this goes beyond hockey, to kind of reset.
Yeah, I use those same techniques at the baggage carousel every day at the airport. So basically the same thing, like
exactly. You know,
as I'm losing my mind, I said, well, what are you people doing? So yeah. I think, but
bum rush to the carousel.
I'm like, yeah. your luggage. So, but that's, I think that's the ability to tell a child, right. To be able to, that's why we should be coaching proactively, right? That's why you can't wait until the kid's having the meltdown to say, hey, you know what we're going to try to do here? Let's try to forget about that goal. Like, that's too late.
Yeah,
right.
This is building that mental acuity.
Communication, Mike. It's all communication.
Yeah, right. It's all communication. Yeah. Every episode. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, go in there proactively, build that confidence in your, you know, in your little 6-year-old, 7-year-old, like find ways to find those routines where giving up a goal, like my son plays a lot. He plays goalie in lacrosse. And we used to laugh, like he gives up like 8-9 goals. Like, no, that's pretty good, lacrosse.
Yeah, exactly.
I said he had a great game. I go, he did? I said, holy crap. Like, but it takes a different mentality to understand, well, that game's going to be 18-16, like not 3-2. And I think this is where, you know, as our, and I think to Paul, to your point earlier about just the success rate, I think that's the reason I'm such a big proponent of, you know, when these kids are playing at the 8U and 10U level of playing like an age appropriate size net and, you know, being asked to do things that, you know, if we want more goalies, then we got to find more ways to make goaltending fun and find more goaltenders to have the ability to be successful. Like, I can't tell you, like in the places I work, like how we keep seeing like at 11, 12, 13 years old, just like a regular player, these goaltenders drop off the face of the earth. Like there's no goalies. And and then the ones that are left are like, oh my God, this is the kid that's left. Like, but if we do a better job of bringing in like the base and giving more of our great athletes, you said the first sentence was, you know, we used to not put our best athletes all the time in net. And it just happened to be like the kids that were really great athletes ended up going to the top. But don't we want more athletes? We want more of those kids. So I think finding ways to give them, I don't know. Do you think it's like, is it artificial success if a kid is in a smaller net, you know, dealing with smaller pucks? Or is it
I'd love Paul's thoughts on that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, okay. All right.
I don't know if I opened it.
Let's back up a little bit here, okay? First off, Mike, routine. Routine is so key because the routine starts as soon as you get to the rink, okay? So you take a look at the guy as soon as you walk out of your parents' car or you walk off the bus or the plane or whatever it is, your routine starts right then and there. Everybody has a different routine. Everybody has a different focus. Okay. I learned something that led up to really my success in focusing through Cap Raider. And it was just something small. It was an easy question that he asked me, and I never really thought about it. Was, do you watch the puck while it's in play the entire game? And I was like, what are you talking about? He says, you know, when it's not in the ref's hand or in the stands or anything, do you follow the puck around? I was like, not really. I'm watching the player, watching. He goes, no. What I want you to try to do is just, while the puck is in play, no matter where it is, focus on it. Focus on where the puck is. You're instinctively going to start looking at the players coming down, if they're a left-handed, right-handed shot, odd man rush, what the game situation is doing, if it's an end of the shift, are they going to dump it in? but you're going to be more focused. Okay. But then he said, it starts right in the dressing room. So what I used to do is I used to take at the beginning, all right, this was at St. Lawrence University, I would take a black piece of tape, okay? And then I would sit there and I would position it right in the middle of my body and I would look at it and I'd have a routine that I would go through in my mind that I would say. And believe it or not, that little piece of tape would start growing and growing and growing in my eyes and I would just be focused and I would be locked in. It would be right before the game, all right, not before warmups, all right, it would be right before the game where the focus started, and then it would be in between periods, right 5 minutes before I'm going on the ice. So that's where that focus went on, and then from there, it was like after they scored, you know, do the process, do whatever you need to do to be able to do it, and that's where you get with the focus, okay? So that's for routine and focus is huge. You've got to figure that out because, Lee, that's where the mental toughness comes in as well.
Right.
All right? Right. Now, are you kidding me? Making nets smaller? I mean, lacrosse goalies. Lacrosse goalies are head and heels above ice hockey goalies because they are absolutely demented. All right. I mean, like, seriously, all the equipment that they wear. And I've met some really good lacrosse goalies for the Toronto Rock. And we had a lot of good jokes off the floor and on the ice and that when we used to talk about it. But seriously, that is a thankless friggin' position. And they look how small their nets are. All right. So with that said, don't take away the integrity of the game. Goalie, when you're 5 and 6 years old, is supposed to be tough. All right. It's getting tougher all the way up. Now they've taken the goalie. I'm surprised the NHL hasn't made the goalies wear shin pads now. I mean, like, seriously, we went from being able to put wooden dowels in the inside of our pads so that if it hits it and goes out, making a double blocker so that it's heavier, that you don't see it. And so if someone comes in front of the net and you accidentally hit them with it, they really feel it. I mean, now it's at the point where, no, the net is the size of the net. The trapezoids, goalie can't go in the corner to play the puck or any. Okay, enough's enough. All right. Like, all jokes aside, keep the nets exactly where they are. I think the blue puck is a key because I wish I would have had that opportunity when I was a kid back wearing the old Cooper GP 35s or whatever they were that didn't have the knee pads. And when you were first learning how to do the butterfly, you'd go down. And I'll tell you what, you take a puck on the top of your knee. The only thing that I can compare it to is taking one somewhere else, if you know what I mean. And your leg goes numb. It's an instant. It's just one of those things. So no, you know what? Keep the nets exactly where they are. Keep the equipment the way that it is. And it's part of the process.
Fair enough, man. Like I said, Mike, that's a question we got to keep asking on these episodes and get around table.
Yeah. I don't want to ask it too many times, because I don't want to have to meet Paul. But I think it's just, I think that was my point, is that we want, like, so in my mind, I would say, yeah, well, don't we want to eliminate all the kids that aren't tough enough to play the sport as soon as we can? Yes, I think so. I mean, honestly think this, like, if you're not tough enough to play, if you can't withstand all the things we need to do, I want to know that sooner than later. Like, I'd rather know it sooner. Like, if you're going to be a real goaltender, right, I want to know how tough you are and how mentally tough you are and how physically tough you are, and that you can make, you know, you can get post to post and dive and make saves and lead your team. Like, I don't want to all of a sudden wait till you're 19 years old and be like, well, this kid just ain't that tough. Like, he can't do it. Like, but at the same time, From a programming perspective and a player perspective, I want as many great athletes into the pool as I can. And I think that although we could make an argument, right, that if you're a little goaltender in a big net and you give up 27 goals in your first time, some kids are going to go, well, I don't care. I like it. No problem. It's not my fault anyway. The D suck, right? That's what I'd be telling my kid as a parent. I mean, the D suck. Don't worry about them. But the other side is, well, don't we want kids to come and go, man, I just made 50 saves. And I guess my point was, isn't that I think it's kind of like when a kid scores 27 goals on you on a big net, that's not real either. Because you're really, you know, how many goals do you see that like fall over an 8-year-old's shoulder, like literally go over the shoulder. So
the little flick shot.
My question was more from the side of how do we bring more kids into the pool and give, and I think that's where like the quick change gear, like I have literally a little program I run with 70 kids. Every weekend we have 12 different kids play goalie. And it's all because it's the ability to take a pad off, put it on, and now they're playing. Now, my pool then, now, trust me, you see kids, you're like, okay, good. The kids shouldn't be a goalie. Like every time the shot comes, he's like, you know. So, but then you have other kids that are like, they give up 8 goals and they don't even care. The smile's on their face and they're competing and they're getting out there. Like me, I played goalie for a long time growing up, and I played goalie and forward. And I used to go back and forth. And then I'd play soccer goalie. But I played soccer. Like, I think I was the only kid in youth soccer making kick saves, like with their toe, like, you know, as a soccer goalie, because I would just react like a goalie. Like, I'd be, you know, they're throwing my glove up and, you know, tackling kids outside the box, things like that. But I think it's, I think that the point, my point was, let's get more kids into the tent and then let's start figuring out, like if we get more kids, our percentages of having great goaltenders is going to go up. Right. I think.
Yeah, I like the idea of, you know, everybody get to try to play goalie once or during the season or something, or you switch it off, and then there's a point. I guess, yeah, you know, for the integrity of the game, it's one thing, but you know what? When you're younger, I mean, Lee, we might have to invest in pipes or something like that. If I'm going to say what I'm going to say is like, oh, we'll get smaller nets for this group and smaller nets for this group, you know, hey, let's go in the net and goalie net manufacturing business. I mean, but I see where you're coming from as far as getting the kids. But take a look at a guy like Curtis Joseph. All right. Cujo didn't start until he was older, a teen, you know, in his, I think, 12, 13, you know. Kids mature a little bit. It doesn't mean if you're 7 years old or 8 years old that you have to be a goalie right then and there. I mean, goalies now are some of the best athletes on the team. Yeah. When you look at every, at, you know, even in lacrosse, take a look at what they have to go through and the stamina that they have in lacrosse as well. And the position in hockey has changed so much. And you know what? It doesn't hurt when you're 6'6". Okay, that when you go down in the butterfly, that your shoulders are at the crossbar. Okay.
Already.
So, exactly.
Well, and we're seeing, right, too, Paul? We're seeing that goaltending, I think, is the one position in ice hockey that's distinctly a late bloomer sport. Like you really get to see, like, when you're 17, 18, 19, you're a good goaltender, all of a sudden kids just come out of, like, the woodwork. You know, it's probably why a lot of goaltenders going to get drafted in the first, you know, first round, right? Because you don't know. Like, you're just seeing a kid going, well, they positionally, they're great, and they compete, and but now they haven't even stopped growing, really, right? Like, they're like now, now, and then let's you know, if you've been a goaltender your whole life, you know, then you got to worry about, okay, well, is this kid's hips going to last? Is his knees going to last? Is, you know, so I like the fact that when these kids start later and they're multi-sport, you know, athletes, and they have all the muscle structure around them to compete, that they're competing for later on. Like, we talk about this on this on the podcast all the time. Like, what is the end game? Like, where's the long-term athletic development principles? And my point is, the more we can keep our goaltenders playing both. And again, I don't see that much. I mean, it's a very nice thing to say. I just see it less and less and less. And I think it's because it's like the kid gets a net and he just wants to be in the net. Like, even though it might not be the best thing for the kid, they're like, well, I just want to be in the net. No. Okay, then it's hard to debate that.
My big problem with it right now is just the inconsistency with it, where, you know, they say you're going to play with this net the whole season, then 85% of the time we're not playing with that net.
That's just nuts. How about this too, Mike?
We just played in this tournament, Paul, you'll like this, where we got a 4-goal lead and they put a bigger net behind my kid.
Yeah.
I got to tell him, which is kind of cool. I was like, you're playing so well, they had to put a bigger net behind.
Yeah, go put a soccer net out there. Screw it.
Exactly. What's the next thing? Yeah, exactly.
I was like, we're punishing him for playing well. I said, you know, like, I obviously reversed that, but that's a debate that's going to go on for a bit. Paul, I do have other questions I want to get to, because again, we're going to talk all day, but I've got three more specifically. I think this is one that our audience always likes. Look, it is tough already to make it as a high level skater. Right. It's much harder to do it as a goalie. What do young goalies need to keep in mind? I should throw their parents in this too. If they want to attempt a chance at the higher levels of hockey.
Number one is, of course, it's hard work. Okay. You have to master your craft. You have to work at it. You know, nowadays it's a lot easier to be able to go online and watch videos of all your favorite goalies. All right. To be able to figure things out where, you know, back before there was a thought of an iPhone or anything, you'd be laying on your bed, throwing a tennis ball up in the air, thinking about how Mike Palmateer just played that and how did he make that save and try to go and emulate him the next day in practice. All right. So you have to be honest to your craft on and off the ice. The next thing, you have to be realistic. Okay. You know, everybody would love their son or daughter, whether it's to play in the NHL or the WNHL. I mean, it's a dream, but again, it's a dream. And there's a lot of things in the universe that have to go right for you to be able to get there. And I think is, you know, the motto of my goalie camps and hockey camps have always been work hard and have fun. All right. Because really, at the end of the day, that's what hockey and sports are all about, is you got to work hard, you have fun. And you know what? There's, what, 64 goalies in the NHL, 64 goalies in the American League, 64 goalies in the coast. Then you take a look at college. You know, as the funnel goes up, the opportunity goes down. And, you know, that's life. That's exactly what it's all about. So, you know what? You lay it all on the line every time that you play. And, you know, hopefully you get in the right situation where somebody takes a liking to you and you get the opportunity and you make the best of your opportunity, because that's another key thing, is you can't complain if you got the opportunity and you fail flat.
That's great. Yeah, advice. It's,
yeah. I mean, I just want to pull on that for a second, too, because we've talked about this with other guests. Is that knowing that competitive piece has to be in there later on. Like, it really has to be in there later on. Like, you're going to go to a camp if you're good, right? You're going to a camp and nobody gives a crap where you play. They want to see what you do. Like, what are you doing today? I think, so what would your advice be to a parent that has like a 12-year-old, 13-year-old player that is looking at a team and the coach is giving them the line, like, you're our starter. You're the only one that's going to play all the time. You're going to be our number one. Yeah, there's going to be another kid there, but he doesn't mean anything to us. Ugh. You know, you. Would you say, like, no, I want the competition built in. Like, right. I want my son or daughter looking across the ice and seeing somebody that's trying to kick my butt and take my spot. Yeah. Like, I just, maybe not at seven, but at, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old.
That's when the funnel really starts, when you really start taking a look at it, because then you get these, I'm going to be politically correct right now, these family advisors, okay? then you get these junior, whether it's the lowest junior league, I'm not going to mention any leagues in specifically, but even with the Puerto Rican Ice Hockey Association, what we're trying to do is to make sure that we protect our players. And what I mean by that is the U16, U15, U17, going all the way up even to U20, is to be able to set them up for success at the juniors. Because, again, it's a business, all right? And I didn't understand that until it was too late, unfortunately. That hockey, no matter what level you're at, when you get to 13, 14, and 15, it starts becoming a business. All right. Not only for the family, because of all the investments that they made for traveling and your equipment and everything like that, but for the junior teams. And the junior teams have these showcase camps or these other camps that aren't even part of the junior organization. They call them showcase camps. And you're going out to these showcase camps and the parents are spending, you know, $1,500 to get out there, and you're going to be put on this team and this kid got drafted. And I heard the story from a family just recently, and so-and-so got drafted to the NA and this kid went to the US and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but that was that kid. I said, when you take a look at the overall prospect deal model, it's to make them money, not you. and to give you false hope that, yes, we're going to have 47 different colleges and junior teams that are going to be scouting whether the guy goes on to watch it afterwards. You have to be realistic about, hey, if you have the opportunity, and I said this to another one of our players, to go to a main camp. If they're inviting you to their main camp, that's another story. But these prospect camps, these pre-camps, it's a money grab. So from a parent, Mike, realistically, that's how you have to set the expectations and your son and daughter up for success. Is like, don't put them in situations where they could be the best player out there and they're looking around and the competition wasn't even there. And then all of a sudden they go to a real camp and they're like, they're the worst player out there.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult. It's very difficult. You just have to be realistic.
Well, sometimes that's the hardest part. Yeah, I was just saying.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, people like you, Paul, tell it real are part of the key here. A couple more from you, Paul. So you mentioned it a minute ago that you're the head coach of the men's national team for Puerto Rico. Something I know a little bit about, obviously, as I coach with you. But I wanted to ask kind of for the audience, right? Why is that an experience you wanted to pursue? What does it mean to coach that team? And what is the prospect moving forward for Puerto Rico hockey?
You know what? I got out of hockey for coaching for a few reasons. It was this entitlement that I felt that when I walked into a dressing room and I listened to the kids speak and listened to the parents, it really took away the passion that I had. You know, whether it was just running my hockey camps or goalie, because you had a few kids that were out there that really wanted it, and the rest of the kids were I called them ice money. They were there to pay for the ice, and that was it. And then I really took a deep look, and it's like I just wasn't having fun, whether it was at the junior level, whether it was at just the rec. And I stepped away. And when I got the opportunity to go and coach a country, wow. I mean, it got my juices going again. It was just unbelievable because of the pride, because of the emotion, because of everybody wanted to succeed, to set the organization up for success. It wasn't selfishness. Yeah, everybody wants to play on the men's national team. But I keep it real for all the players. And I think when they look at each other, you know, they know that number one, when you sign up for Puerto Rican ice hockey or PREA, you're going to be part of that organization for life. All right. But there's only so many people that can play on the men's national team, the women's national team, U20, U18, and U16. But we also make it so that the other players can still play within the organization. And it's the pride that goes into it. And I mean, to me, I only played for teams. I never, ever got the opportunity to represent my country, or now countries, however you want to say.
Which country are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly. you know, it is so refreshing to see all the passion that is going on behind the scenes. You know, with our first training camp for PREA coming up in Chicago. Chicago Blackhawks are opening up their practice facility for us. It's going to be an unbelievable experience for a number of these players who have never, ever had that opportunity before. We've got some amazing talent that all of a sudden is just popping out of the woodwork. I got an email and a text message from, hey, we just found out that Tyler's grandfather was from the island. Does that make him eligible? I would say yes. He's playing in the USPHL. It was his mother finding out for his son, who's like 26 years old. And I mean, it's amazing the opportunity going forward for, you know, whether it is your parents born on the island, Puerto Rican, your grandparents, or if you were born on the island, the opportunity to play for Team Puerto Rico for the men's or women's team is an awesome opportunity. And the talent level is just literally rising by the day.
Yeah, and I'll echo it, Paul, what you said too, that, you know, being part of the IIHF now and working towards the World Championships, I love that you mentioned this. Everyone in the association, from the players to the volunteers to the parents, is pushing towards that goal.
Yeah.
Right. And you said it, it's a nation, it's a country. That it's a totally different thing than your local club hockey team just trying to push through the season, you know, and the pride that we see daily is amazing for that.
Especially Hintley, just let me interject just for a second. It's like when you just said it, it's the country. Okay. Like you're representing. So it's a lot bigger because you're playing for your grandparents, you're playing for your parents, your kids, you're looking at it in a totally different way. Whereas when you're playing in junior, it's a team, but you're looking out for number one.
Right.
Okay. Because you're trying to get to that as a team as a whole, you're trying to win, but you're trying to get to what your goal is as well. For Priya, there's one goal.
Right.
Winning the world championship in our division. That's it. That's our goal as an organization for every single level. So that's why it's a totally different concept. And whether you're Canadian and you're watching Sidney Crosby score that goal, I mean, against Miller, it was unbelievable. That's what now, after 3 years being in IIHF and being eligible to play in the world championship, Puerto Ricans have a lot for ice hockey to be proud of.
Yeah, and I'll just mention real quick that Crosby scoring on Miller was not a good memory for me. but I do love that you love that. And yeah, look, final thought on that too, is just to prove your point. You know, we were part of a team recently that competed in a gold medal game. And on that day, a hurricane was hitting the island. And suddenly the game, while important, like we were playing for something just way bigger than a gold medal. You can't draw on that typically in other organizations to that level, right? There's always the whys, but wow, that was a moment. Paul, I want to ask about this too. So we talk a lot about on Our Kids Play Hockey, Our Kids Play Goalie, about the ability to transition your work ethic, your drive, your hatred to lose to business. And a lot of the most successful business people I know were former athletes. And I want to talk about your business for a few minutes, Ultimate Hockey Fans, because a few things for our audience. Again, it's a fully licensed NHL business. He makes amazing wall art, amazing ceiling fans and light fixtures that you have to check out if you're a fan of hockey. But your approach to this business, and if you've been listening to this episode, you can tell Paul has a lot of hockey stories. He loves this game. And he's able to express those stories and those memories in a way that allows you to experience them with him. And I think you've incorporated that into your business, right? Where you're not just selling NHL logos, right? You're selling memories. You're selling parts of people's lives, whether it's NHL or individual. So talk to me for a little bit about the business and what it is you're trying to create from an aura standpoint to make people not just invest in a product, but their life, their memories, and their joy.
Well, everything that I have in life has come through hockey one way or the other, whether it was getting my first goaltending camp through an old friend at who knew my father at a rink who needed a goalie. And next thing you know, 30 years later, I'm doing goalie camps. Then all of a sudden, you know, getting into a situation in my family life where, you go through adversity. And then all of a sudden, a guy like Al Carey from PepsiCo steps up and I'm in corporate America. And then all of a sudden I have an idea to change a room in our house that was my daughter's playroom to turn it into a game room to put up all our hockey memorabilia, and needed a ceiling fan, wanted it to be something cool that was hockey oriented, went online again 15 years ago. There really wasn't anything out there, and just happened to stumble after I purchased a ceiling fan at Lowe's, going through the garage, came up, saw some old goalie sticks that were all rotten, and was like, hey, I might just cut the ends off of these and stick them up. Had an old goalie mask, throw it over the light fixture, and hey, here we go. I don't know if it's going to work, but it's going to look cool anyways. So that's really how the story happened, how I came into the Ultimate Hockey Fans. It was the four goalie blades, and a used goalie mask that I put on my light fixture. started to come in the quite the conversational piece at parties, and happened to have a good buddy that's a patent attorney. Was like, you got something here. And yeah, we ended up retiring from PepsiCo, and then literally jumped right into the hockey ceiling fan business. The Blades started taking on a transformation of their own, because as you know, there's only two goalies on a team, and all my other buddies are players. He goes, hey, my son doesn't want a goalie mask and a goalie stick in his feeling. You got anything else? So then went to the garage, started tinkering around, and came up with a player blade. And then from there, that goalie mask still looks kind of creepy, Paul. I was like, okay, no problem. I'll work on something. And then came up with a puck light fixture. So from the puck light fixture, we decided, well, not only could it be for a ceiling fan, but we could use it as a wall sconce. You could use it as a kid's ceiling light, and now as a pendant light. So it's really taken the transformation of its own. And the one thing that that I look back on and I'm very proud to this day is that every single piece that comes out of my shop, I manufacture. I have one other guy that helps me out, but to be able to do it, and I learned this unfortunately the hard way when I had my real goalie mask business, was that I trusted the manufacturer. I was going out to do the sales and everything. Everything was going to be in-house, and unfortunately he went bankrupt, and so did that business. I was never going to let that ever happen to me. It's a passion that from the ceiling fans, all of a sudden someone was like, hey, my grandson just finished his first season of baseball. Can you make me a piece of wall art for him? And I was like, wall art? I was like, well, yeah, I guess I can try to figure out something. And then just from that one piece of wall art was like, I can do logos, NHL logos. I came up with a custom for the 25 teams that won the Stanley Cup, an unbelievable piece of wall art with the logos that has the names on the Stanley Cup. I mean, they are so clear that you can read them.
You can read them.
A goalie, yeah. Yep, you can read all the names on it. The clarity is unbelievable. The goalie mask, of course, I had to come up with those for each of the NHL teams. And then we just launched the jerseys. And from 4 or 5 feet away, you see them hanging and illuminating on the wall, and you think it's a real jersey. And then you go up to them and you look at it, and it's metal. So, yeah, you know what? I've been very blessed over the past 4 years to be licensed with the NHL. And, yeah, the company is growing.
Well, I love it, Paul. And like I said, I always like to bring up people on the show that have businesses, because as a business owner myself, we don't see the behind-the-scenes stuff. You just kind of see the end result. And as Paul said, everything that leaves his factory goes through him. He sees it before it comes to you. And I think that echoes the standards that you shared in net. And if you're watching this episode, not listening to it, you'll see one of them behind me. You'll see one behind Paul in the Puerto Rico logo.
It's not one behind me.
Yeah. Well,
you know what, Mike? We gotta hook you up.
And Paul, I know what to get Hank Lammons now for a gift. I'll make sure. Now I know what to get him.
Yeah. So yeah, Paul. Oh, Paul, Mike sat through this whole hour and a half just to get one of these. No. But those of you at home can see him. But check him
Mike,
out.
Mike, we'll get him a Hank Lammon. There's a couple ways I could have went down with this, but we'll get him a nice St. Lawrence All American hockey one that we got.
Yeah, he'd love it.
I think what we should get is one of an angry Billy Smith like chasing him, so we have that behind him all the time. So this looks like he's always running. For those of you listening, obviously, if you're interested in that, check out ultimatehockeyfans.com. Paul really does run a great business. He's honorable. You can trust this man, and he does extremely high-level good work. I was blown away when ours came in person. I said, wow, this is way higher level than I thought it was going to be. So I would have been remiss if I didn't bring that up, Paul, because you have a great business there.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'm out of questions. Mike, are you out of questions too? Do you have anything else you want to say before we move on to the end?
No, I'm good. I'm not going to bring up I don't want to bring up any controversy. So no, good. It was unbelievable. Like, I mean, any time we get to hear from goaltending and get all these different perspectives, and it's funny how most of the goaltenders we talk to they all have the same ideas. It's just all melded in, and the great ones we talk to. I mean, I think the people that know the position and know how to teach and know what to look for maybe have different ways of getting there. But I think at the end of the day that the core values of right. What we need to do as coaches, what we need to do as parents, and how we need to treat our goaltenders, you know, really really tie in pretty consistently.
I agree.
Paul, I just want to turn over to you for any final thoughts before I close the episode.
No, you know what, for all coaches out there, for especially for the youth, it really is important to integrate your goalies into practice. Always have at least 5 minutes at the beginning of practice to work on their fundamentals as far as their mobility. Get them in the net, work on their mobility drills in the net as well. And remember, it's all about working hard and having fun playing hockey.
I love it. Well, this has been a really fun episode. And for those of you listening to Our Kids Play Goalie, we got some more fun ones coming up. Paul Cohen's a top guest right now. We have a famous E-Bug coming on the episode soon. I'll just tease that to let you know that look out for that. But as always with Our Kids Play Goalie, we're looking to expand the knowledge of the position for everyone, not just the person between the pipes. But yeah, this was a phenomenal one, Paul. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening. Once again, if you are looking for a late end of the season coach's gift, head over to ourkidsplayhockey.com. We've got that stuff there, including stuff from Ultimate Hockey fans if you are interested in learning more about that. But without further ado, for Paul Cohen, Mike Benelli, I'm Lee Elias. You've been listening to Our Kids Play Goalie, and we'll see you in the next episode. Have a great week, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. Make sure to like and subscribe right now if you found value wherever you're listening, whether it's a podcast network, a social media network, or our website, ourkidsplayhockey.com. Also, make sure to check out our children's book, When Hockey Stops, at whenhockeystops.com. It's a book that helps children deal with adversity in the game and in life. We're very proud of it. But thanks so much for listening to this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, and we'll see you on the next episode.